When you come to Christ Community Church, it is our prayer that every Sunday you have an encounter with the living God, that you see Him for who He is, and thus learn to live in the light of what you have seen. So when you leave this place, you leave a changed person. We want you to honor God. We want you to live for God no matter where you go. And so this morning, when we look at Genesis chapter 33, we want to remind you that Jacob has had an encounter, a literal encounter with the living God. He has wrestled with the angel of the Lord. And yet, we see this man with all of his frailties. We see this man having been changed by God, having been given a new name by God, yet living not a new life. Genesis 33, let's read it together. Verse number 1, then Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. And he put the maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. But he himself passed on ahead of them and bowed down to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids came near with their children, and they bowed down. And Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed down. And he said, "What do you mean by all this company which I have met?" And he said, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own." And Jacob said, "No, please, if now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably. Please take my gift, which has been brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have plenty." Thus he urged him, and he took it. Then Esau said, "Let us take our journey and go, and I will go before you." But he said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. If they are driven hard one day, all the flocks will die. Please let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will proceed at my leisure, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord at Seir." And Esau said, "Please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built for himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore, the place is named Succoth. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram and camped before the city. And he bought the piece of land where he had pitched his tent from the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected there an altar and called it El Elohe Israel. Jacob encounters Esau. 4 things I want you to see this morning. Number 1 is a review. Number 2 is the rendezvous. Number 3 is the reunion. And number 4 is the result. And it will be a surprising result, I promise you. First of all, you need to see a review. The text says, then Jacob lifted his eyes. When was the then? 3 things you need to see. Number 1, the previous passage. Number 2, the lesson learned. And number 3, the true test. Number 1 is the previous passage. It was the day after Jacob encountered the living God. It was the next day after he'd wrestled with the living God all night. You see, God had prepared Jacob for his encounter with Esau. I want to let you know something, that when you go to worship God and you encounter the living God, He is preparing you to face whatever it is you're going to face this afternoon or tomorrow or next week or the week thereafter. God is in the process of preparing you. Which leads us to point number 2, the lesson learned. There was a lesson behind all that. There was a lesson behind the wrestling match. There was a lesson behind why God touched his thigh and branded him for life. It was so that Jacob would learn to lean upon his God and trust his God and learn to rely upon him in every situation and in every circumstance, and to realize that after the blessing, there comes the battle. And Jacob needed to be prepared. There's a lesson to be learned, like there's a lesson to be learned for you and me, that when God prepares you, he prepares you for the next day, for the next week, for the next encounter. And Jacob had been thoroughly prepared, for God had broke the man. And God had taught him that it would be God himself who would strive for him. Then comes the true test. Jacob lifts his eyes, and he encounters the coming of Esau with 400 men. Now both of these men are well into their 80s at this time. And Jacob had beguiled his brother some 20 years earlier, and it was going to be a difficult encounter, to say the least. The Bible says in Proverbs chapter 18, verse number 19, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city. And Jacob had his work cut out for him. Hebrews 12 tells us that Esau was an ungodly man. He is a man who represents the world. And Jacob was going to face his true test. But God, remember, had prepared him to face the test. God had touched him, and God had branded him for life, that he would always be reminded that God would strive for him. And I'm reminded of us when I read the story, that God has given us a new name. Has he not? Sure he has. In fact, I read over in Revelation chapter 3, verse number 21, excuse me, Revelation 3, verse number 12, about the church of Philadelphia. When Christ says, he who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he will not go out from it anymore. And I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and my new name. God has branded us. God puts his name on us because he owns us. All that to say this is that when God saves you, you have his name now on you. You are called a Christian. That name is so misused today. Everybody's a Christian today. Just because they go to church, just because they don't swear, just because they don't smoke, just because they don't drink. I've just characterized my dog, by the way. My dog doesn't smoke, drink, or swear either. But he's not a Christian, although he's a good dog. But the bottom line is that when God gives us a name, he gives us his name. We are Christians. We are followers of Christ. He is our master. We are his slave. He has given us his city, so our citizenship is in heaven. And he has given us a relationship with the living God that no one of the world has. And so our lives should demonstrate the fact that we have a new name. Jacob had a new name. And in his name was the name God, Israel. God strives for him. Even in his new name, God's name was there. And therefore, he should live up to that name. But he doesn't do that in Genesis 33. The true test comes. 400 men and Esau. And Jacob has the wonderful opportunity to tell his brother about his new name, about his encounter with the living God. And you know what? He never tells Esau of his name change. He never tells Esau that he had a literal encounter with the living God. And most commentators will say he passed the test. I'm here to tell you today that there is no resolution in this relationship. Oh, there is a semblance of it. There is a truce. It looks good on the outside, but I'm going to tell you why there is no reconciliation between Jacob and Esau in Genesis chapter 33. Point number two, the rendezvous. The rendezvous. Three things you need to see. Number one, the preparation. The preparation. 550 animals. Cows, sheep, donkeys, all kinds of things, man. Amazing. This was a very high-priced gift. Would be like me saying, listen, I've got three or four houses down in Laguna Beach that I'm going to give you. And in the garage of each of those homes is a brand new BMW. It's all yours. You can have it. And with that comes a membership to the spa down in Laguna. And with that comes gift certificates to the different stores in Laguna Beach. That's the essence of the gift that Jacob gives to Esau. This is a big gift. Jacob was a wealthy man. God had blessed him. And so he prepares this great gift for compensation. Because after all, he had the blessing, he had the birthright. Esau had nothing. That's the preparation. Number two, the precaution. You notice how he does this, don't you? Takes all the maidservants, two of them, Bilhah and Zilpah, and their children, puts them in the front. And then behind them is Leah and her children. And then behind them is who? Rachel and who? Joseph. Will you note that he is the only son mentioned by name? Remember, if every word of God is inspired, that is written by God, God breathed, this is very unique. It's preparing us that there's going to be a long narrative about this man, Joseph, a tremendous man. But it also tells him something else. You know what it tells you? Even at that early time, and Joseph is probably around 6 years of age at this time in Genesis 33, that you begin to see the favoritism shown to Rachel always, but now Joseph as well. But the way he puts them in order is very significant, but it tells me it's no wonder those boys hated Joseph. And so you see his precaution. Meaning to say that is he really trusting God? Is he letting God strive for him, as his new name says? Is he really relying upon the Lord God of the universe to protect him and watch out for him? Why not put them all in a row? Why not put the 11 kids in front and their mothers right behind them all in a row? Why put them in that order? I think that Jacob is very cautious as to what he's doing, for he doesn't know the heart of Esau. Should have learned to trust in his God completely. Then comes the presentation. And you'll note that as Jacob sees him coming, what's he do? He bows 7 times. And if you read most commentators, they will tell you that this is the Eastern custom of the day. I want you to notice something. Esau never asks a very key question. He never asks Jacob why he now, what? Limps. He never asks the question because Jacob never limps in front of him. Instead, he bows before him. And if you read the history of this tells you that this is one demonstrating to the conquering king who comes his total submission to him. And that's, again, a violation of what God had already told Jacob, that the older would serve the younger. And so you see a lot of the old man in the new name. And when we find ourselves in the face of a difficulty, when we find ourselves facing a trial, what do? We revert back to the old method of handling things. And here is Jacob bowing down in submission to this one, Esau, who was supposed to serve him. And never once walking up to him as a man of God, limping to his brother, for his brother to say, Jacob, what happened to you? Why are you limping? And for him to say, let me tell you what God did to my life. Let me tell you how God transformed my life. Let me tell you about my encounter with the living God. Instead, he camouflaged it. And so he bows before his brother Esau, which leads us to point number 3, the reunion. And 3 things I want you to see about the reunion. It's emotional, it's informational, and it's, to some degree, restitutional. First of all, it's emotional. What happens? Esau sees his brother Jacob, and he runs up to him, and he hugs him, and he kisses him, and they both weep together. Was Jacob expecting that? I don't think so. But remember, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and he turns it wherever he wishes. God's in charge. And had not Jacob prayed in Genesis chapter 32 about his fear of Esau and that God would deliver him? This is an answer to his prayer. And God already knows what Jacob's going to do. And you say, oh, wow, this is great, man. Where was that bitter, jealous rivalry? Where was that anger spirit that Esau had that says, I'm going to kill my brother? God had changed Esau's heart. This is a testimony to the power of Almighty God. And for the most part, we would say, at long last, there's been restitution. But not necessarily. The second thing I want you to see, it's informational. And Esau asked the question. He says, in verse number 5, he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, who are these with you? Who are these beautiful children, Jacob? And these women, who are they, Jacob? Tell me about your family, Jacob. So it becomes very informational. Now, again, Jacob has a golden opportunity to talk about God's sovereignty and how God orchestrates the events of life to bring about a greater purpose. But he doesn't do it. But he does say this. Let's give him some credit. The children whom God has graciously given your servant. And so he would at least give God credit for that aspect of his life. And then comes the third point about this reunion. Is that it's, to some degree, restitutional. You'll see that Esau asked the question in verse number 8, what do you mean by all this company which I have met? And Jacob says this. He says, after Esau says, I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own. And Jacob says, no, please. If now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand, for I see your face as one who sees the face of God. So even Jacob now is realizing that God has done a work in your life, Esau. But you will notice that Jacob never says anything about his encounter with God. You see, if he spent more time convincing Esau about his God, instead of convincing Esau he needs to take the gifts, just maybe would have been a true reconciliation in their lives. And yet, you'll notice that there was no confession of sin. That's why there was no true restitution or reconciliation. Because you see, Jacob, although he is a patriarch, although he's a great man of God, is he not a lot like you and me? Nothing is taken care of because they haven't dealt with the sin issue. The thing that separated them from the very beginning. There was no dealing with the sin issue. You say, wow, you're awful hard on Jacob. Yeah, I am. And I'm going to get harder on him in a minute. You know why? Because I find myself in Genesis chapter 33. I know exactly what Jacob's doing. And if truth be told, so do you. How do you know? Point number 4, the results. 3 things I want you to see. I want you to see, number 1, the discussion. Number 2, the deception. And number 3, the destination. First of all, the discussion in verse number 12. Then Esau said, let us take our journey and go, and I will go before you. Now, if there is true restitution here, if there is true reconciliation here, brother and brother would be together. And what does Jacob say? Jacob says, my Lord knows that the children are frail, and the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are driven hard one day, all the flocks will die. What is that? Now, remember, now most of these boys and Dinah, most of these boys are teenagers now. So they're not frail little kids. They were in front of the horses. They were in front of the cattle. They were in front of the parents. They were up there running ahead, scoping out the view, seeing what's coming next. Really? And so, please, let my Lord pass on before a servant, and I will proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle that are before me and according to the pace of the children until I come to my Lord at what? Seir. Wait a minute. What did God call Jacob? Canaan, not Seir. Do you recall the time in Genesis 33 where Jacob told Esau that God had called him to the land of Canaan? He didn't, did he? Because he wasn't going to tell Esau where he was going because he didn't want to be with Esau. That's the bottom line. There's no restitution here. There's no reconciliation here. You go on ahead and you know what? We'll meet up with you in Seir. Really? Yeah, go on ahead. No problem. Except one. Esau says, well, how about if I leave some of my men with you? Ooh, Jacob didn't count on that. He says this, verse number 15. And Esau said, please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. You know, I'll go on ahead and I'll leave some of my men with you because the terrain is kind of rough and there could be robbers. And you know, let me leave some of my guys with you, Jacob. And Jacob says, oh, no, no, it's okay. We can take care of ourselves. You go on ahead and we'll meet you there. He's a liar. He was going to the land of Canaan, which is on the other side of the Jordan, which was the land that God had promised him, which was the land God told him to go to. He didn't even tell Esau that. He should have said, Esau, listen, God has called me to the land of Canaan, not to the land of Seir. And again, he missed a golden opportunity. And he should have told him what God was doing in his life. There was a discussion, and then there was that deception. He deceived Esau. He wasn't going to go to Seir. He was going to Canaan. And he knew it, and he didn't tell his brother. He deceived him. He lied to him. How about you? You know, a lot of times when we have that opportunity to speak for God, do we take it? Do we jump on it? To talk about the new name that we have? Sometimes people ask us questions about why we don't do this or why we don't do that. You know, when I was growing up in high school, kids used to always ask me, are you going to the prom? I said, no. Are you going to the homecoming dance? I said, no. They said, why? And I should have said, you know why I'm not going? It's because as a born-again believer, I'm not sure that's the place I have to really be attending. But instead, you know what I said? My parents, man, you know what? They are just so hard-nosed. They're not going to let me go. And, you know, I got in trouble last week, and now my punishment is I can't go. So I lied. I cheated. I deceived. Had the opportunity to stand strong, and I blew it. I blew it until I got a little older in high school and learned to stand strong and say, you know, it is true my parents don't want me to go, but in all reality, this is why I'm not going. And you know what happens? The more excuses you make about why you don't do things instead of coming out and boldly speaking the truth for God, will lead you to compromise your stand with God. And that's what happens to Jacob right here. You'll see it in a moment. Yeah, we're going to go over, so just bear with me for a minute. But you got to see this. You see, he had all these opportunities to stand strong for God and to confess God as his transformer. And none of that came out in the discussion. The only thing he said was that God has dealt graciously with me. And you know what? The unbeliever says that, oh, God's blessed me. God has blessed me. How many times have I heard that out of the mouth of the unbeliever? That doesn't mean anything. Which leads us to number three, the destination. For Esau, it was to go to Seir. For Jacob, it was to go to Succoth and then to Shechem. And now you're going to see, when you don't stand strong for Christ when given the opportunity, and you deceive, and you begin to water down what is the absolute truth, what happens? It leads to compromise in your future. Mark it down. If you don't learn to stand strong today, tomorrow you will be weaker than today. If you stand strong today, you will be stronger tomorrow. If you stand firm on the fact that you have a new name and you have a new life and God has transformed your attitudes and stand strong for him and testify of his existence in your life, you will be stronger tomorrow. But if you deny him today and you are weak today, you will be weaker tomorrow and it will lead to compromise. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. Because that patriarch Jacob, he had to face it. Esau went to Seir. Seir stands for everything that's worldly. It's a barren land. It's a barren land even today. It's the land of Edom. Esau's descendants stand for those who are worldly, those who have no consideration for the things of God. And that's where the world is. They have no joy. They have no fruit. They have no milk and honey as the land of Canaan had. That's where Jacob was supposed to go because that was God's land. Seir, Edom, where Esau was going, the place of the world. If you're here today and never given your life to Christ, you're living a life of barrenness, a life of idolatry, a life away from God. And that's where Esau went, thinking that brother Jacob was soon to follow. But Jacob went the other way. He went to a place called Succoth. Wait a minute. He hasn't even crossed the Jordan River yet. Succoth is to the east of the Jordan River. To get to the land of Canaan, he had to cross over the Jordan. The text tells us in verse 16, Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built for himself a house. Whoa, hold on a second, Jake. What are you doing? You're building a house in Succoth? That's not Canaan. That's not where God told you to go. But he builds a house. How long does he stay there? We don't know for certain. But he wasn't going to Seir, and there he was. This is disobedience. This is not obedience. Follow with me very closely. If you disobey today, the chances of disobedience tomorrow are greater if you don't confess your disobedience and get right with God. Jacob disobeyed God. He didn't go to the land of Canaan. He went to Succoth and he built himself a house. And he put in that house, around that house, places for all of his animals, stables for them to live in for a time being. And then it says in verse number 18, now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem. Okay, let's give Jacob some credit. Now he's crossed the Jordan and now he's into the land of Canaan. But you know what? This is not where he should be. You will note three things he does in Shechem. Number one, he pitched his tent. Number two, he bought a parcel of land. And number three, he built an altar. Let me tell you what happened. Genesis chapter 31, verse number 13. God says, I am the God of what? Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land and return to the land of your birth. Go back. Go back where? Go back to Bethel. How do you know that? Go back to Genesis chapter 28, verse number 18. So Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. And he called the name of that place, what? Bethel. Bethel is where he built the altar. And in Genesis chapter 31, God says, get up and you go back to that land. You go back because I am the God of Bethel. Say, how do you know he was supposed to go back to Bethel? Genesis chapter 35, verse number 1 says this. Then God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and live there and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. Listen to me very carefully. Jacob goes to Shechem, and although it was in the land of Canaan, it was not Bethel. He should have been at Bethel. That's where he was supposed to go. And how do you know that? Read Genesis chapter 34. His daughter is raped. His boys lie. His boys steal. And his boys commit murder in Shechem. Does that honor God? It does not. Because this man compromised. And so when you come to Genesis 35, God says, get out of there. Go to Bethel. That's where you're supposed to be. You say, well, wait a minute, he built an altar there. How many times do we live in disobedience? We live a life of disobedience. We have an affair. We don't think anything of it, but we still go to church. We still read the word, hear the same sermon everybody else hears. But we know that as soon as we walk out that door, we're going to go back and live in that illicit relationship, thinking that somehow my religious activity, my religious observance is going to appease God. But let me tell you something, just like God told Saul. So he tells us today, to obey is better than sacrifice and to hearken than the fat of rams. You can't live in disobedience and think that your worship to God is going to appease him. And Jacob, yes, he put up an altar, but the consequences of living there would devastate his family forever. Forever. Folks, let me tell you something. When God says do something, you better do it. You know why? Because if you don't, you will compromise. You will. And if you compromise, guess what? You will face the devastating consequences of your sin, unfortunately, for the rest of your life, as Jacob did. How about you? God controlling your life? Are you living up to that new name? And maybe you're here today and you're facing some of the consequences of your compromise. Today's the day you need to get right with God. And when you get to Genesis 35, oh, it's going to be a great passage. Commentators entitle it, Get Back to Bethel. Get back to the house of God. That's where we need to be, right? Confess our sin to God. Get right with him. If you're living in disobedience, today's the day to confess it and get right with God. Let's pray together.